Hello and welcome back to Casting Nets Podcast. I am Will Harley. I am joined here with my cohort in crime, the bald but yet beautiful Don Winsberger. And he's sort of chuckling right now. He's trying to stay quiet because he knows he's beautiful. He's a beautiful bald man. At least that's what his wife says, and we'll leave it at that. Today, we would like to give our brief disclaimer that everything that we say is just our ramblings, our regular thoughts, and they're not the opinions of our employers or of the synod in which we are a part. And so as we have an opportunity, if we do make you upset with anything that we say, hey, contact us, give us a call, do something that lets us know that maybe we've offended you and we'll have a conversation with you, or just shut us off. And if you do like what we have to say, give us a like at the end of all of this and boost our egos that we're actually not wasting time and money as we support this type of endeavor. So without further delay, let's jump on into our topic. We'll have a little bit of transition music and join our topic for today. All right, welcome back. Thank you. And our topic for today is one that I do believe is timely, at least for my cohort here. We are talking about vacancies. And so, Don, have you lead us into this conversation?
Thank you. I'd like to preface when you'd said, if we offend anybody, that means that we have succeeded. And you who have been offended know who you are. And we were singling you out. So, and I say that in jest. But anyway... vacancy, you know, as we decided what this topic was going to be for today, I tried to think to myself of maybe any examples in scripture where there were vacancies. And the closest I can come to is at the suicide of Judas. And when the disciples gathered after Pentecost and decided that they were going to choose a replacement, that really hits the call process. That's something that some of your congregation and Maribel and the congregation and Winter can relate to. But really, different congregations do different things, different synods do different things. And I think maybe because of the way we do things differently, maybe it's something that adds to some of the panic, the anxiety, and the sting about a pastor leaving and about there being a vacancy. For example, in Roman Catholicism and in different areas of the Reformed Church, like in Methodism, pastors are moved around at the discretion of the church body. Okay, the pastor doesn't have a say in it. When it comes to us as Wisconsin Synod Lutherans and churches of the Evangelical Lutheran Synod and even many in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the pastor decides where if he's going to stay or if he's going to leave. And I think sometimes that adds to the sting and the anxiety of the congregation who loses a pastor.
I think you might want to maybe clarify that just a little bit more. In the Lutheran circles, in the churches that you mentioned, you know, they don't just get to decide whether or not they're going to leave. I mean, there has to be a call presented to them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Thank you. That's a key element. I apologize for leaving out. We just can't arbitrarily leave, say I'm done, without leaving the ministry and never coming back in.
Right. There you go. And that, I think, makes us fundamentally different than some of the other congregations that you had sort of... had highlighted. Yes. Because, you know, there are many of the Reformed, not all the Reformed, but many of the Reformed are contract based. And so they either can buy out the contract or they can let the contract expire and then move on to something else. In Catholicism, like you said, it's by the will of the church body. And by the church body, we do mean the hierarchy church body, not necessarily the local congregation.
Yes. And you know, there's one of the things I notice in a vacancy, there's probably more anxiety depending upon the situation. more anxiety with the people that are waiting to get a new pastor. There can be anxiety on the pastor's part, depending upon how well he and the vacancy congregation mesh.
I think there's anxiety on, I do believe also that there could be a lot of anxiety in the recipient of that call's church. I don't know what you would call that congregation, the current holder of the call.
Yeah, yes.
And especially if, like, well, in my congregations in Winter, when I was holding the call to come to St. John's in Maribel, a lot of my members, they saw what it is that Maribel had. They had a school, they had, it was closer to my parents. And I think that caused a lot of anxiety before I even had a chance to say anything or deliberate myself or to really talk with anybody. They all kind of had it in their head. Well, it's almost a no-brainer because look at all of these things that are stacked against us. And that's gone into, and maybe I'm wrong, and you were at the call meeting for them, but I think some of that has gone into their calling into the future. If they have kids, we're not going to call them because they're just going to leave as soon as they have an opportunity to go to a parochial school. And so it limits their desire or their willingness to say what man might be the best person for the job.
I'll give you a semi-correction because on this last, at the call meeting the other night, there were four pastors. Three of them had children that were grown and out of the house, and they called the one pastor whose all four kids were home.
Oh, wonderful. And, so good. I'm glad. I'm happy for that. But again, you can see where it has happened, right? Their first call their first call was exactly the opposite of a younger guy. They wanted a guy whose kids were gone and was maybe in the second half of his life instead of the beginning portions of his family career.
Yes. And you have, as we're talking about vacancy, you know, it is, there's a lot of anxiety, anticipation, not only trying to figure out why did the pastor leave? Who are we going to get? How are things are going to go? But maybe let's take some time here because I don't want our people to think that we as pastors are callous or that these are not things that we don't, that these are things we ignore when we are deliberating a call. Because I really think it maybe be good at this point to explain to our members why a call coming to a pastor is a good thing for both congregate for all for the pastor and all of the congregations involved. It's not because I've been getting this impression it's been right before me so vividly right now. But every time a pastor gets a call, everybody in the congregation, both congregations involved, view it as a negative thing. Could you enlighten us on why this is not a negative thing?
Well, and this is the hardest part that people don't see. You know, the Lord of the church, what he is looking out from above and in his congregations, and he sees what is in need, right? He sees if whether or not the pastor who is pastoring a congregation needs an opportunity to reconsider and to refocus himself and say, what is it that we're really doing in this congregation? What is it that I can be doing in a new congregation? And then ask themselves, have I done what I thought I was sent here to do? If I haven't, what more could I do? If I have, well, that doesn't necessarily mean I go, but it might mean that now we maybe have to find something else that we should be focusing on because we're just spinning our wheels. We've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish, but now we've sort of stalled. And now that question for that pastor is, if we've stalled, have I led them as far as they will be willing to let me go? Or Or do we still have a lot of miles left to go before we've reached that point? We just need some refocusing, a new fire to be lit in the pastor himself. So there's a very, very good thing for the pastor. For the congregation, it's also very good because the congregation has an opportunity, and I've heard stories of congregations doing this. They love their pastor. They love the shepherd that God has provided for them. But they recognize that they maybe know him too well. They recognize that maybe they not only know him too well, but they can anticipate him. And it becomes something of more of a, how do you put it? And I don't want to say stagnant, but in a nice way, maybe it's comfortable. And comfortable to the point where they're no longer being stretched. And the congregation says, you know, maybe this is a good time for us as well to say to our pastor, we love you, but it is time that our roads part and you go to a new field and we go to maybe a new farmer who will be here to tend to this field. And that's okay too. And that's something that I think, and also, and if the pastor doesn't leave and the congregation isn't tired of them, it maybe gives the congregation the idea that says, you know, very simply gives the congregation the idea that says to their members, wait a second, you know, we could lose our pastor. What haven't we been doing that maybe would help out our pastor in some way, right? And so maybe they get a little bit of a jump start into saying, no, these are areas that pastor maybe took on that he shouldn't have taken on and we should have been doing. And I think that's happened in winter, from what you've said.
Yep. And those are things that actually stretch ministry, keep ministry moving forward. It's hard for people to see because you get emotional in this. We're human beings. You know, it's a wonderful thing when our people love us. It's a wonderful thing when they don't want us to leave. It's even more emotional and difficult when a congregation wants their pastor to get out. And not because it's better for everybody involved, but just because there's been instances with that before where the pastor and congregation are constantly, you know, let's put it this way, the relationship isn't good on either side. But it's an emotional thing, and it's a good thing. I had people asking at the call meeting the other night, Pastor Winsberger, you know, so-and-so has only been there for so long, or so-and-so has had, he's been there for a while. Why would he want to leave or whatever, you know? And especially they were focused more on the guys that hadn't been at a place for a long time. Why would they want to leave? And I said, you know, you have to, first of all, you don't know anything about their background. It's really hard not to look at the physical things, but you really can't look at those first. And, you know, I was in a place for 22 and a half years, 14 calls. The Lord didn't lead me out of there until the 14th one. And I didn't even think before that one came, I had no intentions of going anywhere.
Well, and that's, you know, what was it that we were told? I forgot what professor, and I don't think you had him, but I guarantee you had a professor who said it to you before.
You treat every call you're at like you're going to be there forever.
Right. And that the best place for ministry is the place you're called.
Yes.
Right. And this is the thing that I think hopefully all of our listeners understand. We as pastors, when we receive those calls, we're instantly called to love those people that have called us, that congregation. And that doesn't mean just because we are called to love them in this new call that we no longer have room to love the congregation we left. And you know, just for my own standing, I loved Winter. love the people in Winter. I think Winter is a wonderful, wonderful place. South Dakota, I never thought I would say this when I got there or when I first got the call, but South Dakota is just a wonderful place to raise children. But that doesn't mean that it's the place that God wanted me to be for the entirety of my ministry. Yep. And I can't say, you know, I'm loving Maribel. I'm loving St. John. I'm liking the school a lot. I'm getting to know the people and I'm loving the people. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. But can I guarantee that this is where my last stop is going to be? I think along the road in Winter, I realized I can't make that guarantee because God knows better where he wants me to go and where my gifts could be. And some people are going to stand by, and I know you know this too. Some people are going to say, well, so-and-so took the call because of money, or so-and-so declined the call because of money, or whatever else. And, you know, I'm sure that that happens out there, but by and large, pastors don't do that. By and large, pastors aren't looking at, they have to look at the bottom line at some point. But the majority of their decision making is their family and their first call to their family, and then the call to, man, does this call that I received fit in my framework of things that I think I can do?
And this is an encouragement to all of our congregations that when they are in the calling process, if you are afraid that financial is going to be a detriment, do your best to make sure it's not.
Very good. Put your no matter what it is, put your best foot forward. Always put your best foot forward. And this is you hit on a point that I think most of our people I think downplay, and that is they look at it and they think sometimes the call is, well, we can get now the same thing for less, for cheaper. Right.
Yep.
And really, instead of thinking that way, I think our people, and this is one of the benefits of what the call can do and the vacancy especially can do, is refocus our attention to say, you know, let's not try to find the cheapest option. Let's find the best option.
Yep.
Whatever that's going to cost us.
And I think right now, as much of a, I'm not, it, this is maybe a hidden blessing in our over 130 vacancies in the synod. It's actually forcing congregations to look at and say, okay, we're not going to always look at the younger, cheaper option. Let's take a chance and go after some experience to a pastor who maybe hasn't seen a call for. Do you care if I shift gears here a little bit, because I do kind of want to get back to the focus of vacancy itself a little bit.
Absolutely. Go on.
I want to commend the saints at Trinity in Winter a little bit, because already, even though the vacancy is only is a little more than 2.5 weeks old now, for the first time, and I have held probably in 31 years of ministry, I have held probably about 15 vacancies. And it's the first time in my experience that immediately I have not been approached by leaders or members in the congregation to fix the delinquent situation. Usually pastor, can so-and-so hasn't been to church in ages, you know how it goes, can you go visit them? And that is not something, that's actually an area where I see that I think maybe Trinity has picked up on a little bit. Something that was credit to the Lord and your guidance over there, to where this is something that they're owning themselves and not expecting a clergyman to take care of.
And that's where we wanted him to be.
Yes.
And you know, the Lord be praised that they're expressing that understanding.
And you know, looking and maybe what I'm getting to is expectations during a vacancy. And I'm and dear listeners, I'm not telling you what I expect you to expect, okay? What your expectations should be or shouldn't be. It's just a point of discussion on how different congregations have different expectations, not only of their during a vacancy, but even when they have their pastor. And this, and a lot of this, and a lot of this stuff is all right. Okay. You know, one of the things maybe, and this isn't an issue here, I appreciate so much. And most of the time, as I've filled vacancies and as you filled vacancies, people understand that where our first call is to, and that's to the congregations that we hold a permanent call to. And they're very understanding and that, but then you have a few congregations where they expect Trinity, you're not one of these, and I haven't encountered congregations out here in the Rosebud that do. But some congregations expect their ministry to go on, if not at a normal, at their normal accustomed pace, but even greater.
And I think we should backtrack just a set, just a little bit here. Because one of the things I told the members at Trinity when I left was my prayer for them is that their next pastor has to catch up to them, not you catch up to him. And so I believe that ministry can continue. But for ministry to continue, it has to be embraced by the congregation, not be something that our ministry. And this is, I think, the ultimate, maybe this is where you want to go with this. So many of our congregations get it in our head that it's pastor's ministry and everything that is happening in the church, well, that's pastor. And then when pastor leaves, everything comes to the screeching halt and the vacancy almost limps along where the vacancy pastor can ask questions such as either they're overtaxing me because they want what their permanent called worker would bring them.
Yep.
Or they say, well, I'm content to just have nothing because, well, we'll just wait until our pastor comes. And then things start to just fade.
And that's just where I was going with this, Will. When I was vicaring 32 years ago, 33 now, oh Lord, I'm old.
We didn't want to say anything.
But one of the things that I learned and appreciated from him the most is that a testament to the ministry in general is when a pastor leaves, how smoothly the ministry takes place afterwards in the time, in the term of vacancy. When a pastor can help his congregation to understand and at least be open to taking ownership of what is theirs, not pastor's, it's not pastor's ministry. And you are absolutely right. It is the church's ministry. We just happen to be the public representative.
Right.
As the vacancy pastor labors with the congregation, pretty much it's pretty much the way a vacancy pastor ministry works and should work. It's just like it should in the congregations he's permanently called to, as one is actually who is, if you want to call a facilitator, definitely a leader, but not the one who does it all.
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that the healthier the congregation in the sense of understanding their call as this priesthood of all believers, this call as a member of the congregation, their understanding of that and the better they understand that leads to the impression of how good or how bad a vacancy is.
Yes.
I mean, you could have a year-long vacancy where the congregation is stepped up, they're chipping in, the ministry is going, and the vacancy pastor, he's doing a Bible study, he's coming in, he's doing regular worship, whatever time, probably not the same time they're used to, but it could be. But that idea, though, is that everybody says, well, things seem to be going along just fine. Well, they're going along just fine because of the ownership that the congregation has taken to their ministry.
Yes.
Not because the vacancy pastor has come in and said, okay, I'm going to treat this like this is my first call and I'm going to do everything for you just like it did everything for my congregation. You know, you said it so beautifully when the congregation step up and they say, okay, this is what a pastor needs to do. just because this is really what would fall into that purview: preaching, teaching, administering the sacraments, sharing the gospel, helping equip us to do this work. That's what I would expect a vacancy pastor to do.
And that's what we expect pastors to do.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely. 100%.
I'm gonna downshift here a little bit, because this is something that came to my mind as you were talking, and this is something that you and I experienced together, because we served a vacancy together for a year.
We actually served 11 congregations, just the two of us, over at some point.
Thank you for bringing back that memory. That was a nightmare that I had really repressed, and thank you for bringing that back.
Well, I like to share.
Thank you. But you know, I think about, as we were in that situation, it went on for a year before they finally got a graduate from the seminary. And it was an emotional time for that congregation as well. You heard some of it. I did, as we were conducting meetings, whether they were call meetings, maybe it would be after worship. And it was hard for them too, not being able to worship on Sundays like they were used to. Distance didn't allow either one of us to be there on a Sunday. And I can understand, and I relate to the frustration of that. But their biggest frustration was, what's wrong with us? Or is the Lord mad at us? Pastor, why can't we get a new pastor? And that was something in the midst of maybe some frustrations I had, where I can really say for that congregation, my heart broke.
Right. Because it had nothing to do necessarily with them. It was the fact that the Lord was preparing the right man for the right job and preparing them for that right man. And that's one of the perks of the vacancy, right? Let me take this into the realm of the new pastor stepping in after the vacancy pastor. If the pastor before the vacancy did his job right, they moved smoothly into a vacancy. And if the vacancy pastor did his job right, which I don't know of any vacancy pastor that necessarily doesn't, I mean, maybe one or two. But for the most part, you know, a vacancy pastor does his job.
But anyway, what?
The vacancy pastor does his job. When the new pastor comes in, there's some nervousness there because everything is working. And I don't know about you, when you first came into Cologne, after the vacancy and everything with Pastor, and then Pastor White, who had vacated, and taken a call somewhere else. But there's some nervousness there. And the nervousness isn't necessarily, do I know how to preach a sermon, or do I remember how to teach a Bible study? The nervousness that I'm feeling like right now with the congregation is, I was very, very comfortable and very, very happy with how I interacted with my people in Winter. We had an understanding. I mean, it just was. We were very comfortable in how we communicated. And you bring some of those things with you into this new congregation, and everyone looks at you kind of like, I'm not exactly sure. and you're just like, you have to almost redefine who you are. Not change who you are, but redefine who you are. And like I found this week, I mean, this was like my first full week installed. I'm acting in the ministry, and I'm looking around and I'm thinking, there's a hill that I need to fix, and this is a bridge I need to rebuild, and this is something else that needs to get started. And I'm just like, zing, 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 zing. And by the week is done, my wife had to sort of grab me by my ears and say, you've been here a week. Stop it. It took you 9 years to get where you were going when you were in Winter. This is your first week. Slow down. Because
she's a wise woman.
She is.
Other than her choices in husband, she's a very wise woman.
I've always questioned that too. But that was the thing, right? That was the thing that brings on the nervousness of the new guy coming in, because the congregation's still moving. And you want to catch up to them, but you have to realize that you can't catch up to them as fast as you would like because they don't know you. They haven't lived with you. They haven't cried with you. They haven't, put it to you this way, the vacancy here at St. John's, Pastor Rudat, wonderful, wonderful job doing the vacancy, had something like 3 or 4 funerals where he stood at the bedside of the members here during the 6-month vacancy that they had. That endears you to these families, even as the vacancy pastor.
Yes.
And now you get this new guy stepping in and they're all like, well, Pastor Rudat did a fabulous job. And they're all excited for the new guy. But the new guy is not the vacancy pastor. And the new guy is not their last pastor. And you're the new guy. And they're going to respect you because they called you, but they have no idea who you are.
And let me, because as I say this, I get an opportunity to encourage you as well as I get an opportunity to encourage the people you're serving right now and the people you have served. Through all of this, you guys are going to go in directions that you have never gone in before. Okay. You and your congregation in Maribel, just because of the shift in personalities and in the relationship and new personalities in the working relationship, you're just going to work differently together, and you're going to go in directions where God wants you to that maybe you didn't go before. I shared with the voters at the voters meeting the other night, about some of this too. I know I hadn't, when I left Minnesota, the two congregations I served there, I had been there for a long time, and there were things that with one of the congregations where I really wanted to lead them, had some great ideas. There was a small group of people that wanted to do it too, but the majority just wouldn't go for it. When I returned there to celebrate that congregation's 125th anniversary, and I walked into that building and I saw all of the changes that the Lord had done with the man who followed me, where he was able to lead those people in that direction. I can say a little bit, maybe I was joyful that stuff was there. There was maybe a little bit of disappointment with my sinful nature, we didn't do that together. But the thing was, they did it. It was good for the congregation. It was neat to see them work and progress with someone else.
And I think this is, and you bring up a beautiful point. I think for every pastor covering a vacancy such as yourself, leaving or now the new pastor ending a vacancy, I think we all have to stand in the very shoes of John the Baptist and say, I must become lesser so he can become greater. Our Savior is the one who ultimately stands above the church. And we are called, I think I preached on it too, but I did not come up with this analogy. But the analogy that pastors are really not the shepherds, maybe under shepherds, the presbyteros, but more the sheepdogs. We're the sheepdogs for really the good shepherd. And no matter what function we're performing, vacancy pastor, full-time pastor, semi-retired pastor, we're really just performing this job of being the sheepdog where the good shepherd says, wrangle them, circle them around, bring them back here. And then you sit and listen too. And I think when we get so full of ourselves, that's when our sinful nature kicks in and says, the church can't survive without me. The church can't do this without me. And some of our people, when we're leaving, they did it probably when you left Minnesota too. Pastor, the church is going to fall apart without you. And there's a part of you that says, man, I feel good about that, right? Yeah, the buttons sort of pop on the chest because you're like, I'm so... And then you leave and you get the stories and you're like, it didn't fall apart. Oh, shucks. But you're happy it didn't fall apart, but you're kind of sad because you're kind of hoping that you were irreplaceable.
That's a reminder that to us that, and it's something that our professors at seminary taught us well, and I will shamefully say that my sinful nature doesn't grasp all the time, but does better now, 31 years out of seminary, is that the ministry goes on despite us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is, we are clay vessels. We are clay, we're earthen jars, clay vessels. The Lord uses us as imperfect of vessels as we are.
And we're cracked pots. I've used that before too. And
you are a cracked pot, but that's.
but it's that, I heard on some other podcasts, wonderful Lutheran podcasts that have made the illustration that it is from the lips of one sinner to the ears of another, right? That we have been given a message that in and out of vacancies for these congregations, for these people, we get to share the message of Jesus Christ and Him crucified, and what an honor it is. But that sinful part of us, for every pastor, as well as it is the sinful part of every congregation, says, I'm afraid of this change, or I value what I have, and no one else can do what I did, right? And so we get this into our head where all of a sudden we think we are indispensable to the ministry. We are indispensable to the ministry because the ministry all of a sudden revolves around me. And so we got to get it out of our head that we are indispensable. Congregations have got to get it out of their head that one pastor leaving isn't going to break their church. It's not going to break their church. It's not going to hinder them in any way, shape, or form.
No. And they come to realize that. And as we're talking about this, Pastor Harley, we're not criticizing our people for this. This is a normal course of separation and process that just about every single congregation goes through in their history, and goes through more than once, because very few congregations can say in their entire history that they've only had one pastor, because physically, really realistically, that's impossible. Some churches that, you look in their history, I've had very few pastors in my congregation I grew up in. They've been around now here for about 110 years. They, in their history of 110 years, have had five pastors. And that's rare.
And as rare as that is, and I think there's two sides to that coin. The first side is, it's a blessing to some in some regards, but it can be a hindrance, right?
Yes.
A pastor staying huge amount of times in one congregation can lead to stagnating that congregation, because they know this is how the pastor is going to respond. This is what he's going to do. The pastor knows I can't mention this because the congregation is going to do that. And they're too familiar with each other. But on the flip side, you get to the Rosebud, and this was notorious in the Rosebud for not ever, but for a good long time. At least the perception was, we're going to have a pastor for 4 or 5 years, and then we're going to send him on. And it was like a revolving door. We get a pastor come in, and then the pastor leaves, and we get a pastor come in, and the pastor leaves. And they were all usually graduates, right? And so this understanding of, we're going to get a graduate, we're going to train them, they're going to have their experience here. 5 years from now, they're going to get a call, they're going to leave, we're going to get another graduate, and the cycle is going to start all over. And unfortunately, I think in that cycle, or that cyclical idea, that can be just as damaging too. I think that it can be just as damaging for the congregation to view, well, don't worry, this pastor is going to go in 4 years. So if he does something you don't like, I just won't come to church for 4 years. And then when he leaves, I'll come back.
Let's keep in mind with all of this too, as we talk about this, and this is our musings that we kind of talked about at the beginning of every podcast, is that with the situation in the Rosebud, when we look at the teaching of the divine call in Scripture, that has been God's will.
Sure.
For the well-being of these congregations and pastors too.
And I'm not denying, yes. we can't talk about the ministry without talking about God's will playing the ultimate part and role in it. But you do look at it from
and it is stuff that shapes people's viewpoints. It shapes their approaches. It influences their attitudes. Yes. And while again, I recognize too that there are so many things that I appreciate about the Rosebud and with West River, South Dakota, and the West River mentality. It's a different mentality that you don't see in other parts of the United States.
Absolutely. But I would equate what we're talking about to Jonah's ministry, right? He knew exactly what the Lord wanted him to do. He knew exactly the message that the Lord wanted him to speak to Nineveh, right? And what did he do? He ran away. He even went so far as to try to kill himself, to not give that message, to not do what the Lord had wanted, the Lord's plan. And then at the whole end of the entire book, what do we have? We have Jonah complaining to the Lord. This is why I didn't want to do it, because this is exactly what you do all the time. Well, you know, that happens with our congregations too. There are some congregations that are very good at training pastors. They're very good at taking the pastors out of the SEM and giving them experiences and nurturing them in a way and being understanding to them in a way that other congregations just can't, and then sending them on.
And on the flip side, you know, you look at it with Jonah's familiarity with God, his sinful nature, but he was speaking a truth even though it was coming from his sinful nature. God's familiarity is such a wonderful blessing to us. It's a constancy. It's a part of that never leaving, never forsaking, his dependability. And so that's one of the divine blessings. And so there are blessings too when it to that familiarity, that constancy, that can come in a ministry too, because I don't want us to come, and I know we're not, but I just want to make sure that we're understood. One of my predecessors in Minnesota had been in that congregation in Lake Benton for 40 years. And again, his ministry was richly blessed.
And it can be. And I'm not saying it can't be. But like, let's say, this is my personal experience, and I'm just going to share my personal experience. So for all of you in Winter, I love you. I love you. I've always loved you guys. You guys are amazing people. Out of any call that I could have had or any assignment I could have had coming out of the seminary, I am so richly blessed to have had that assignment to Winter. Now, did I know that going into it? Absolutely not. Did it scare the living daylights out of me when I was going through it? Absolutely did. Did I make mistakes in the beginning years or months of my ministry there? Yeah, we all do. But you have been uniquely blessed. The people in Winter, they're not the only congregation, of course, but my congregation that I interacted with in Winter, they were uniquely blessed in this idea of being patient with the new guy. They stood behind him. They supported him. They encouraged him. And in that case, it was me. And they sort of let me find my feet. And I'll be honest with you, the members at St. John and Maribel are going to be blessed, I hope and pray, because of the way that you allowed me to grow and the things you allowed me to experience by God's grace among the members at Trinity. And so I'm prepared now to take this next field of operation. I'm prepared now to come here and with God's help, bring everything that I've learned, everything that I have gone through there and had a chance to interact with, to bring it here and say, okay, it's different location, different people, but there's some experience here.
And God's people in Winter are equipped for the next stage in their ministry too.
Absolutely. For the next guy to come in. And maybe the next guy will be another pastor from the field, and they come in, and you know what? Maybe the people in Winter are going to say to the next guy, you might not be used to this, but this is what we would really like. So let's work together to do it. And now you both are going to grow. You're going to have an opportunity. Or the next guy's going to come in and say, you've gone this far. We can go so much further and take you by the hand and lead you. And you'll step back as the vacancy pastor and say, well done, good and faithful servant. God bless you. I'm out of here.
Yeah, and it's funny, none of us know what the Lord's got in store, but it's going to be good. We shared that with our brothers and sisters down to the southwest and west of us during their year-long vacancy. People in Trinity, I'm not saying that's how long yours is going to be. I've never have a grip on these things in my entire ministry. Ones that I think are going to be short end up being long. Ones that I think are long. And really shortly, that's God's lesson to me to say, just let me, I'm handling this anyway. Just stop even thinking about it.
And there you go. And when it comes down to it, in the very, very end of it all, in the very end of it all, long vacancy, short vacancy, God has it all in his purview, and he's preparing the right man to do the job. He's preparing the right congregation for that man to come in and take over that job. And really, when it all comes boiled down to it, what is the honor and the privilege that congregation pastor, vacancy pastor gets to do? What is the honor of what we still have in our hands?
Working with the means of grace, preaching, teaching the things that we're equipped and love to do in ministry, we continue to get to do them.
Absolutely. And that's really, and I think, and we're coming on almost 50 minutes here. And so we probably want to wrap it up, but I would love to wrap it up with those words, because the congregation that's in vacancy still has the opportunity and the honor and the privilege to share the means of grace. And the vacancy pastor has an honor and a privilege to share those means with two congregations that normally he might not be able to share with.
Yes.
And the congregation now filled after a vacancy gives that honor to a new pastor in a new area to share that same message with them as they share it with him. And I think that's an important thing. New practices, sometimes new traditions, sometimes new people all the time. Same sinful nature, most definitely. And most importantly, same unchanging, unwavering, gospel-centered on yes. Christ.
And, when you mentioned that, that's something in Bible study this morning, in conversations I've had with the saints over in Winter since the night of the call meeting, that's been said by the people. You know what, Pastor? It doesn't matter who we get. We have differing personalities, differing gifts. You know what? Every guy that comes in here is preaching the same message. Is solid. Good teaching, good preaching, and is solid, is faithful. And they commend our Synod Seminary for that.
And those are the words that we want to end with. The same fact that close your eyes next time you're in church, vacancy pastor, regular pastor, and the voice that you're going to hear is not the man standing in front, but the good shepherd who stands behind every one of them and is speaking forgiveness to you. And so, Don, thank you for your work as a vacancy pastor. Better yet, thank you for your friendship, and thank you for your work as the circuit pastor there in the Rosebud. You have big shoulders, a beautiful bald head, and a great message to share with all the people.
We all work together. Ministry goes the best when we're all working together.
Amen. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.